Hello, this is Chris Nelson from evolveconsciousness.org. Today I will be reading and describing the infographic Truth, Natural Law, Heaven and Hell Bible Symbolism. This is an infographic I had done in the spring of 2014, I think. So it's a continuation of the audios I'm doing for the previous work I've done. Since I didn't do audios when I first did the work. So I'll be reading the right side of text, and then I'll be going to the left side and describing the actual infographic and short texts, which is a summary of everything. And the actual text on the right has more descriptive aspects, using whole sentences and some quotes from the Bible. And on the left, it's a bit shorter. So I could go either way, but I think it'd be better to read the quotes and then explain them through the latter symbolism. Makes more sense to me that way. But either way, you can understand it by looking at either side. It's pretty self-explanatory. Put in as much information as I could in this amount of space to describe what I'm talking about in regards to truth, how it matches up with heaven, and how the opposite is hell, and how this is also natural law, and how we create our world, and how we reap what we sow, which is cause and effect. So technically it's also cause and effect. That's part of natural law. So anyways, I'll just start. So, Truth, Natural Law, Heaven and Hell, Bible Symbolism. There is an equation to enlightenment. I would just like to add, anywhere that I have quotes and it's not sourced from the Bible, where it says Romans, Corinthians, Galatians, Matthew, Mark, whatever, if it just says text with inside of quotes, that's because it comes from a site where I was reading up a lot on this. Had to do with the Nazarenes, which were the Essenes. The Nazarene Gospel and Community Rule. It all has to do with natural law and living rightly. And this site had a lot of information about that stuff, and how they had decoded the symbolism in the Bible. So everything that has quotes comes from that site. It was like, the guy had like 6 to 8 different domains, so the information was across many domains. Anyways, to continue. There is an equation to enlightenment. The abandonment of this equation, while on occasion, permits syncretistic factors to provide the semblance of success in the manner of a broken clock that is correct twice in the period of a day, but true success can only be assured when natural laws indigenous to all planes of reality are simultaneously evolved and consciously harmonized in a sustained effort to focus all activity in the absolute zenith of a pinnacle of the pinnacle of expressive being. The original gospel accounts portrayed Jesus as a man who fulfilled the law within himself to become the anointed. That last sentence, I recall when I made this last year, that last sentence, I added it from another part within the person's work, and I may have modified some aspects of the paragraph, but whatever, pretty much comes from that person. So essentially, you know, true success isn't the happenstance of, you know, your daily life of some things working out, and your ignorance of natural law and truth and the right way and path. Things do happen to go right. You can't be wrong all the time, or else what, you'd be breaking your leg all the time. Things would be going wrong all the time. Things do go right most of the time. But true success is only when the indigenous laws of all planes of reality are simultaneously evolved and consciously harmonized in a sustained effort to focus all our activity on that absolute zenith of the pinnacle of expressions of being. That's why I'm talking about the true self. Developing true care will bring you to more fulfillment of aspects of your being and becoming that which is truth, love, good, right, natural law, morality, higher self, true self, higher will, etc. That is the zenith above us. That's the sun that we're aspiring to in the sky. We're trying to raise our consciousness towards the sky and not lower to the ground and base consciousness. We're trying to raise ourselves up to evolve, consciously harmonize in sustained effort every day to focus all of our activity on that absolute zenith, what's represented by the air and the sun and the sky, which is the spiritual and the truth and the absolute, what's above us, the higher consciousness and not the lower consciousness. And that's Christ consciousness to be anointed. To have the law, fulfilling the law within yourself and externally manifesting it. That is what Jesus was. That was Christ. And we can all be that. The original teachings of the way was a system whereby the seeker disciple takes the yoke of Messiah, Christ, upon themselves, picking up their own cross and traveling in the way, which enables the disciple to enter through the narrow gate and dwell in the kingdom while still physically alive in the body, overcoming the division of heaven and earth within the person. So essentially, this is talking about the afterlife. There is no afterlife. The afterlife is when you've rebirthed and reawakened within yourself, and you've traveled the narrow gate and carried your own cross and developed the yoke of the Messiah and Christ consciousness within you, whereby you are living and fulfilling the law, natural law, within yourself. And you're traveling that way, and you're carrying your own cross, the heavy burden of being responsible for yourself and trying to clear up the confusion and the evil and the immorality and the falsity in the world. Because it doesn't matter if you clean up yourself only, there's still other people creating the enslavement for you to be enslaved in. Everyone else is keeping you down. So you still got to do work. So you're reaching the kingdom of God in heaven while still alive in the body. This is the afterlife. Because you reach the kingdom of heaven when you die. But you got to die, you got to be lost and die in admitting how wrong you are and how confused you are. You got to die that way so that you can actually start to learn properly. You have to die in your ignorance and reawaken to the desire to seek knowledge and seek truth. So you're still alive, but you're more alive. It's your second life, your second awakening. And each time you go up the ladder and awaken to greater levels and depths of understanding truth and morality of natural law, you're getting more alive. You're going up in successive levels of the afterlife, into more life, into more aliveness, into more energy, and the fundamental force of the will of creation, the force of truth, love, good, right, and morality, natural law, that force within you that brings us life, the spark of the divine, that divine truth, love, good, right, morality, natural law, true self, higher self, higher will, that is the source, and the source is coming into us. We are embodying it. We are living it. We are exemplifying it. We are being it. We are becoming it. That is what makes us alive. And the more we become that, the more alive we become, the more of that fundamental source energy comes into our being symbolically, but it does charge us. We get more charged. We're more full of energy. We're more alive. We're more running inside. That's the true life. So I'll continue. I was going back and forth on the left and right there. You know, I have alive and life and heaven and kingdom. So I was relating everything. To continue. So this is not a quoted paragraph. This is one I wrote. The path, the gate, is narrow. Truth, love, good, right is one way. It's strict and requires a narrow focus of dedication and effort to it. That involves tribulation and hardship, not a wide array of convenience, but strict and arduous effort to pass through. I'd just like to note that my presentations on foundational living and true unity involve describing this in terms of knowledge. And if you look at a pyramid, at the top it's narrow and at the bottom it's wide. So it's easier to go through something that's wide and where all the bullshit is and there's least truth. But the most truth is found at the tip in concentrated ingots, what you might refer to as wisdom, which will lead you to right action, but I refer to it as understanding. Those concentrated ingots of truth, of wisdom and understanding, at the top of the pyramid, that's a narrow path. It's very narrow at the top. At the bottom, it's very wide. And that's why it's easy. And that's why there's a lot of bullshit there, because it all coalesces in the path of least resistance. But truth is a hard path. It takes a lot of work to get to. So there's a symbolism in the pyramid. You can look at that in Foundational Living and True Unity. To continue, it is difficult to walk and live in the way, not easy as is a wide gate to pass through, of comfort, ease, amusement, gratification, enjoyment, convenience, and comfort. The way is a narrow servitude to truth, giving yourself to truth, embrace truth, care for truth. This is serving truth, sacrificing yourself to truth, giving yourself to truth, not compromising the truth, but really serving and sacrificing and standing up for truth and morality. To continue, here's another quoted part from that person's site. If the words of Jesus are true and the kingdom is within you, then the question that Christians should be asking is, how must the kingdom be entered? The answer is the proper application of the key of knowledge by turning the scriptures within your own mind and being. Here's a quote by Origen. Because there are many who go wrong in this life, I do not consider that it is easy to pronounce, without danger, that anyone knows or understands those things which, in order to be opened up, need the key of knowledge, which key the Savior declared, lay with those who were skilled in the law. So what is the key of knowledge? What is the key of knowledge for answering how we develop the kingdom within us? What is the key? Well, Origen just said what the key was, and that is the law, with a capital L. What is that law with a capital L? That is natural moral law. Universal, cosmic, spiritual, natural moral law. That is the key of knowledge. So what knowledge are we talking about with natural law? Well, if we're talking about natural law, then we could say that's mostly the higher laws that govern our behavior, if we're aware of them. We align ourselves with that law, and that is the key for the kingdom within us, to create the kingdom within us. The key of knowledge is the key of self-knowledge. So that's why I was getting with natural law. It's the law is governing our behavior, but it's also our behavior, the self-knowledge of how we're supposed to act and how we actually act and the motivations for our behavior and how we desire things and care for things and want and wish things and how we're fooled and manipulated that way. We have to have self-knowledge of ourselves and self-knowledge of the laws governing us. So that would be the key of knowledge represented in the law, which the key of knowledge is demonstrated as your skill in the law. And that will demonstrate, that will enable you to open the door to the kingdom within you. So here I say, natural law is the key to knowledge, the knowledge of wisdom, the wisdom of right action. Thayer's lexicon uses the term initiate, and an initiate is one who has become prepared to receive higher instruction and Revelation. We'll take a look at that on the left after, but the initiate is one who, instead of being unbegun and uninitiated, has chosen to begin and initiate their journey, not as an ignorant fool, as someone who is unbegun and uninitiated, but as the fool who chooses to take that leap of faith onto the path of truth and morality. That leap of faith in the belief that truth can be found. If you think of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, when he takes that leap of faith off the ledge and he lands on that optical illusion walkway, well, it requires a leap of faith as a fool to begin that journey, but it's not the complete fool of being ignorant and not caring to learn and not wanting to begin the journey. It's the fool of taking that initial step that requires belief. So that's about the initiation. So higher instruction and revelation. In the parable of the 10 virgins, which is in Matthew 25 verses 1 to 13, only those who had prepared themselves with the oil of purification could receive the Lord at his coming. What was the oil of purification? What is this? Well, when you look into Christ and Christos and the anointed, how Jesus was the anointed, how Christ was the anointed, and the oil that you anoint someone with, the oil of purification, again, we're talking in symbols. And the Christ consciousness is symbolized by Christ and Jesus and anointed and the oil of purification. So in the parable of the 10 virgins, only those who had prepared themselves with the oil of purification could receive the Lord at his coming. What was the Lord? What was Jesus symbolized as? And as the sword of truth that you need to ally with Jesus the Christ and not with your parents, not with your mother, not with your brother, not with your sons and daughters. You need to ally with the truth over your personal attachments to other people. Yes, that would be the Lord. And you could receive that devotion to truth, that self-sacrifice and serving to truth and morality, to stand for it, by preparing yourself with the oil of purification, anointing yourself with Christos, Christ consciousness, and then you will receive the Lord, either as Jesus or God or whatever you want to symbolize it as. You'll receive the Lord because you're going to receive the way, which is the law. You're going to receive the law, which we talked about in the origin quote as the key of knowledge. So you're going to receive the law, and that's the Savior, which is the Lord, and that's God, and that's truth, love, right, good, morality, natural law, true self, higher will. And that's, you're going to receive it in you. You got to be pure. You got to purify yourself with the anointed oil of Christos, Christ consciousness, which is natural law. Truth, how we function. Thus, the five who had prepared themselves were the initiates. And while the other five virgins believed and had faith in his coming, and were in fact awaiting the coming of the Lord, to those believers who had not prepared themselves with the oil of purification, it was said, "Assuredly, I say to you, I do not know you." So all those who are ignorant and want to remain blind, and only want to believe in certain things, but don't want to actually do things, don't want to actually change themselves to align with the law, to anoint themselves, to bathe in Christos, or get baptized, that's another one, which I think I put in on the left side. It should be there. The baptism is a way to reawaken in the birth, to be rebirthed. It's symbolic of that. And the other way that the unawakened, uninitiated, unbegun, dead in the coffin, in the tomb, blinded, that the Lord said, "Assuredly, I say to you, I do not know you." That's because it's the true self. You do not have the true self within you. So when you're looked upon as a false self, no, I do not know you. I, the Lord, who coming into you, I say to you, I do not know you. As the Lord, which is higher will, which is higher self, which is true self, which is truth, love, good, right, morality, natural law, that force does not know you because you are not embodying that force. You are choosing to ignore that force. You are choosing to remain dead, unawakened, uninitiated, unbegun, unarisen, unbaptized. You don't want to become the true self. So, no. When the true self looks at you and you're not becoming the true self, you are more the false self and you're content to be the false self, then I say to you, I do not know you. It's all symbolic. The whole Bible, there might be some historically accurate aspects to it in terms of possible validations, in terms of historical legitimacy for rule. But there's also, primarily, in terms of usefulness, that was the exoteric usefulness and for the rulers to enslave the masses. But there's also a more profound, esoteric, original meaning to these phrases, which people who did not have the knowledge of the symbolism could not completely erase when they reformulated or embellished their stories in order to fit certain historical narratives to provide them with legitimacy, or maybe they never altered them. I'm still of the conviction that the book was highly altered, but the symbolism can't be completely removed. And that's what I find most valuable, is the symbolism, because it speaks of universal truths, not of alleged historical truths with which may or may not have happened, and we'll never know that actually happened or not, because we can't travel back in time, and we can't verify what happened in a time that no one can verify anything about. You got some people who wrote some books at some points, but even then, you understand that the power of literacy and writing, not many people had, and those with money are the ones that had it, and those in rule are the ones with the money, and they could pay others to write whatever they wanted to write. And there's also the fact that, truth can be written about too. So you have to discern what people write about and what is likely true and what isn't. Historical accounts, maybe they're true. And even the historical accounts that we write about, even in our own time, we can't even get right. We can't even get right writing about World War II. And you're going to think that 2,000 years ago, when writing was more restricted, when it was more in the hands of the wealthy and the rulers, that they were not fabricating history? We're doing it right now, and we think we're more knowledgeable, and we have more of an ability to verify history, and even right now we are aware of how history is fabricated, and you want to think, go back to Josephus and whoever, and you're just going to blindly believe what they write? Oh, it might be true that what they wrote was real, and it actually happened. I can't say it didn't, but I can't say it did either. I could say it's a possibility. But what I can say is when I read symbolic allegories for truth, I can understand the truth. It doesn't matter whether the actual story happened in history, in the ancient past, or not. That matters not. No significance to me at all. I don't care about the history that might or might not have happened. What matters is the story that describes the moral allegory and the lessons in life to learn. Now, you can do that with a real, actual experience that's recounted in a secondary narrative and story, or you can do it with a completely fictional narrative and story that's completely invented out of your imagination. Or you can take one based on an aspect of reality and change it so that it no longer represents reality and it's half fiction and half reality. It doesn't matter. What matters is the lessons of universe truths that are contained within the story. I don't care about nursery rhymes and all Rapunzel and all these children's book things. Those stories matter not. Why do you think we read them? Because they contain moral lessons in these stories. That's why they're valuable. the Bible isn't valuable as a historical account. I don't view any text valuable in historical accounts because I can't verify history. It's a nice story and it might be the actual history, and it's a possibility I take into my mind when I'm evaluating perceptions in reality, trying to discern what reality is. I'm not going to dismiss it, but I'm not going to wholeheartedly accept it because I don't know. And no one can know what happened in the past. You can't even know what happened 60 years ago, 70 years ago. World War II. Give me a break. You're going to go back 2,000 years, 4,000 years, and you're going to think you can know what happened? Keep lying to yourself. Seriously. Like, get over yourself and face truth in the mirror and recognize what you can know and what you can't know. Universal truths can be known versus historical accuracy of truth of what happened cannot be known. If you find a pot, a clay shard in the earth, well, you can know that people were here at some point and they made clay vessels and with water or food in them. Yeah, you can know that. Can you know specifically if that was Shem, the son of Noah, and all this stuff? No, you can't. You can't know if those were if those were Hebrews, original Hebrews, or if they were later Israelites, or if they were later Judites. You know, you can't know these things. All you have is alleged stories in a book written by people who want to establish a historical narrative in order to legitimize their rule, legitimize their right to own land, etc. It's all creating narratives and stories to legitimize current conditions or to create new conditions. Anyways, you can read a book, Medieval Empire of the Israelites, or History, Fact or Fiction, Science or Fiction, Fiction or Science, something like that, four volumes. Anyways, history is a lot of bullshit, and learn from stories, not as actual history. Learn the allegory. To continue, we are the prodigal sons and daughters of the Most High, and any time that we truly desire to return to the Edenic kingdom, all that is required is that we seek truth over man-made doctrine, i.e. to turn about from the ways of this world, and we will find the kingdom come within us. This is the truth, the light, and the way for all mankind. So yeah, we need to seek truth and the natural law over man-made law. And that's what is symbolized by turning about from the ways of this world, which we'll look at on the left side. The earthly nature, getting away from the earth, our flesh, the carnal, the beastly, that's all symbolic of our delusions and our attachment to physicality, to animalistic, amoral consciousness, which doesn't have any consideration for morality, which higher order consciousness beings are capable of, but we currently choose to deny and disregard in favor of low consciousness living as basic pleasure-seeking animals, when we can live in higher capacities than that and evolve, but people don't want to. Too much work. Here's a quote from Matthew chapter 17, verses 17 to 20. Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit. Neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into fire. Wherefore, by their fruits ye shall know them. So, every tree that bringeth forth not good fruit is hewn down. So, it's cut down and cast into the fire. What's the fire? Now, there's some aspects to this. You can view fire as hell. two aspects. One, fire as the phoenix, which burns away the corruptness and the evil and the immorality, and allows you to reconstitute yourself as a better version of yourself, to evolve in that way. That's one aspect of fire. So you throw down, you cut down the bad tree that's producing bad fruit, and then you throw it into the fire to burn it away so that it no longer is producing bad fruit in your life. And there's also the aspect, let's see if I can remember where my train of thought was. The second part was of hell, where we're looking in terms of consequences. So the other one was in self-transformation, where you throw it into hell to purify it and reconstitute yourself. And then the second aspect is of hell itself, whereby you have consequences to your negative actions, to those evil fruits from your evil tree. Well, at some point, all that sowing is going to come back and you're going to reap it. Because that's the behavior and the actions we create in the world generate the human world sphere that we live in. And it affects other beings as well on the planet. And it affects the whole planet. But as we generate and create the world as we want it to be, we're going to be creating those evil fruits, and because we're corrupted and we're false. And the fire can also be represented as hell of those evil fruits. That's not what the quote is symbolically saying. The quote is symbolically saying about our self-transformative purification capacities. It's purifying by burning that evil tree and evil fruit. But you can also look at it in another aspect, that the fire of that is required from the evil fruit is because that brings us to hell. And only by going to hell and going through the fire can we rise again. It's in terms of chaos as a teacher. Only by going down to the depths, only by feeling suffering, only by feeling pain, do many people care to change, do many people care to admit that they are wrong and care to do things differently. So that's another way of looking at this, is the evil and hell and fire. Because only by going down to that evil sometimes can we realize the need to cut the tree and finally get out from the fire, from the hell we create for ourselves. So we leave the tree in the fire, the tree of evil in the fire, and we climb up the ladder and get out from hell. That was just another symbolic aspect that just popped into my head. It doesn't apply as well as the purification aspect. So you cannot create real lasting good from evil roots, from engaging in falsity as a way of living. And that's what people who don't understand the animal issue are battling against. Because you have to understand that as long as you are doing any aspect of falsity, any aspect of immorality, any aspect of evil, you will never create true freedom and peace. And everyone who's a carnist, until they admit how wrong they are, that they're going to battle against this. And they're going to get confused in health issues. And, oh, well, you don't have the K2, and you don't have the B12, and you don't have whatever amino acid or something. It's just ignorance in terms of nutrition and fallacious naturalistic fallacies. And, oh, well, if you can't obtain it naturally, then, no, you can't obtain it. It's not right. Right, because murdering animals is natural, yes. For higher order beings capable of understanding morality and taking the life of another being, that's moral. Right. No, clearly you don't understand objective morality. Clearly. Because it is wrong, and as long as you do that, you will be in a lower self, in an amoral consciousness, a beastly carnal consciousness who does not care about morality but chooses to live amorally, letting immorality perpetuate through them, be created through them, be embodied through them, because they don't view it as immoral, because they're in low base consciousness of ignorance of objective morality, And that is amorality. Just like all the other animals, they don't understand morality. As far as they're concerned, there is no morality. There's the harm against them, and they understand some aspects of harm, but they don't understand greater degrees. They don't have the conceptual understanding of morality, of right and wrong, to the degree we are capable of understanding it. So when you reject that capacity to understand morality to that depth, what you're doing is choosing to remain as a low base consciousness, carnal, beastly flesh, untransformed idiot. You're choosing to embody immorality because you're in denial of morality. You want to be an amoral, carnal, beastly animal. You don't want to live as a higher order consciousness being as humans are capable of. You don't want to be a being. Because to be a being is to actually be in the process of becoming and being truth, love, good, right, morality, natural law, true self, higher will. That's what being is. It's about becoming and being our true self. So if you're not being and becoming your true self, well, the true self, I mean, because it's all the same for everybody, then you're not being a human. You're choosing to live as an amoral animal. That's not being a human. That's a human animal. Simply a human animal. When you progress to a human being and you evolve into the greater successive levels of being alive and life in heaven in the kingdom towards salvation, well, then you're less of a human animal. You're always a human animal as long as you're in this vehicle. This body vehicle is a vehicle of an animal, and we are human animals. But when you try actively to will yourself to embody and become true self, higher will, truth, love, good, right, morality, natural law, well, that's part of being and becoming. To become, being is not just a rock is being. Being is actually striving towards something. There's a potential. There's an ideal. Being is part of the becoming. As you're becoming, you're being new things. You're being successively higher levels. So the human being is one who strives to actualize, realize, and individuate themselves into higher degrees of manifestation from that potential of the true self, of that great force. All right, so we're at the bottom part on the right side. What man ignorantly portrays as evil is merely the laws of correction of the left hand returning to each individual person, as well as groups, the fruit of their own ways. And this is cause and effect. This is natural law. Everything evil is created by ourselves. Now, as I mentioned earlier, there are people, despite our will to anoint ourselves, to prepare ourselves with the oil of purification of Christos, and to receive the Lord in us and embody truth, love, good, right, morality, natural law, true self, higher will, there is still the aspect of other people creating evil and having that evil affect us. So, even if we ourselves are not creating evil, there are still 7 billion people on the planet perpetuating the evil ways. Because they don't know the path and the way. They're still perpetuating the wrong path and the wrong way. And we're going to be affected by that. So even if it's not our own ways, we're going to still be affected by the fruits of other people's ways. Because we're all in this together. That's how we are all. Apart from the true self, where we're all one in that respect, we're all coming from that same one. We're all one in terms of all in this together on this planet. And if a bunch of people want to create evil, well, the rest of us are going to suffer through it unless we stop them from creating evil, which is our responsibility to truth, love, right, good, morality, natural law, which is to end evil. as a natural law causal agent, you have that responsibility to stand for truth and morality, to serve as truth and morality, and to sacrifice your own personal stupid life for something greater like truth and morality. Sorry if I mean, you know, your own personal stupid life, because that's how I view all of our stupid little lives. We're all living stupid little pathetic selfish lives, narcissistic sociopaths. It's pathetic, the lives that we lead. That's why the true life and being alive for real is when you begin the spiritual path on the journey towards truth and morality. That's the way. That's the path. Until you begin that, you're in a stupid life. You're unexamined, unawakened, inauthentic, as a false self, perpetuating falsity, immorality, and evil into the world. It's only when you begin to awaken and you begin to really live, to be reborn into the true life, after your baptism, after you've been put back into the canal, the birth canal, right? Baptism, water, birth canal. When you're rebirthed in the awakening process, that's what baptism is. You're being put back into the birth canal, and then you're being reborn out of the water. That's why it's a baptism, and it's also used for second Christians. What is that term? Reborn Christians, or I think you know what I mean. On the secondary Christians, I'm a reborn Christian. There's a term for people who do this. Anyways, you go baptism and you're reborn. It's all symbolic of re-coming out of the womb, which is also the virgin birth symbolic, is initiating the latter degree steps, levels, stages, births, awakenings. It's all the birth. You rebirth. You rebirth from the death, and then you're going to be born alive again. Even though you're already alive in the physical sense, you're going to become alive in the quote spiritual sense, in the sense that really matters. So that we can actually create true freedom and peace. Not just live as alive animals and lower base consciousness and amoral living, yay. That's not alive. That's not the real alive. That's not the real life. The higher alive and the higher life. That's what I consider the real life and real alive. And I do consider everyone else to be dead. They're living in the tomb, in the coffin. They're walking around. But they're the walking dead. They're just zombies. And then some of them you try to talk to. And yeah, they're pure zombies. You talk to them and they're just like bleh, blank stare on their face. Have no higher order thought capacities developed. Sad. That's why I say we need chaos. Bring on the chaos. It's the only way things are going to change. People are not going to care until things affect them really deeply personally. Until they get to the depths and into hell, until they're burning alive. Not to that point, but until things get bad as chaos as a teacher, until there's more pressure, tension, conflict, and interference in their bullshit lives of comfort, and they're not going to care because they got their comfort, they got their pleasure, and they're fine. They got their conveniences and their distractions, and why would they bother caring for other things? They got what they want. So only when you get what you don't want, only when you're in a discomfort, is there a greater possibility for change. That's why you have to have a catalyst. And for me, it was chaos. It wasn't chaos in my personal life. It was recognizing the chaos in the world through a documentary called Terror Storm. But for some other people, the secondary experience of terror, of chaos in the world, no, that doesn't matter. It has to become personal. It has to affect them. Then they'll start to care. So to end it, here I say, seeking pleasure, gratification, amusement, enjoyment, ease, comfort, convenience, over that of seeking truth that can be inconvenient, discomfort, hard to face, and not pleasurable, is due to our current choice to engage in wrongdoings and immorality. Embodying truth is hard work, the great work. now I'll read the left side. I guess this will be shorter, or maybe not. It might take me longer to describe. Anyways, so we have heaven and hell. Heaven is the kingdom, and hell is, I don't know, it's the opposite of kingdom, but it's not. We have salvation or perdition, and we have Elysium, or we have Tartarus. That's the underworld, and Elysium would be heaven. That's represented by the air element or by the earth element. Heaven is Ma'at, Isis, or the right hand, which is truth, natural law, morality, justice, and that's where you begin to be really alive. That's your real life, the second life, from being a walking dead zombie. And that in hell, that's Isfet, which represents chaos, as opposed to Ma'at, which represents justice. And then Eris is the opposite counterpart of Isis, and you have the left hand, which is the counterpart to the right hand. And this is falsity, immorality, and evil. And hell is represented as the earth element, as the earthly lower base consciousness. And this is death and dead, because when you're in the earth, in the tomb, in the coffin, unawakened, unbegun, uninitiated, well, you're in the earth, and it's very dark where there's no light. The light from the sun and the air, from the sky above, does not reach below the earth. So if you're below the earth, in the tomb, unbegun, unawakened, in the coffin, you are dead, and you are blind, because the light does not reach below the earth, so you are blind. And there you go, 7 billion people on the earth walking around who are totally blind. Blind bats. Dead. Walking dead zombies. So I'll just describe the top part of heaven, then I'm going to go from the bottom up, because it's ladder. Ladders start from the bottom up. So what we're trying to reach is higher evolved Christ consciousness of the Spirit. We create heaven by embodying truth, love, good, right, natural law, true self, higher self, higher nature, higher will, etc. Now these are the 7 virtues and values to live in alignment with truth. You can call them the 7 spirits of God. And in Egypt, where we have Ma'at and Isis, where we had, these were Netchers, which were, the gods represented aspects of that force of truth, love, good, right, morality, natural law. They represented aspects of it. And then in higher gods, which had more core aspects, and then you had derivative gods, which represented certain aspects of certain gods, and they were, and then other aspects that were mixed together to make them slightly different. But they all had core aspects of the higher source gods, such as Ma'at was the highest principle, and other gods had aspects. They had aspects of it. Truth and law and justice. I think Ra had aspects of that. Anyways, they're all shared throughout, and people think, oh, the Egyptians thought they were individual gods and all this nonsense. No, it's all symbolism. They're anthropomorphizing into a story narrative of symbolism, and they're describing aspects of reality using aspects of nature, such as the 4 elements as well, in the wheels and heaven and earth, and Newt and Geb, which was Newt was the sky and Geb was the earth. It's just symbolism to describe aspects of reality. And you can see it in nature. So that's what the Netter universal principles are. The Netchers. They weren't literal gods. The Egyptians, maybe the later Egyptians thought they were, but the first people who developed these symbols knew what they were doing. Just like the Bible. Who wrote these stories knew what they were doing with the symbols they were using. They were encoding profound truths for those with the eyes to see and ears to hear. Alright, so we're going to go from the base. So hell, contrarily, we have 7 vices, to live life in rejection of truth, or seven spirits of evil, as opposed to seven spirits of good or God. And this is when we're in low, base, carnal consciousness of the flesh, untransformed, carnal, beastly state. We create hell or evil by embodying falsity through ignorance or rejection of truth. Our behavioral conditioning, mind control, and spells of sorcery magic to construct our reality, false ideas, conceptions, definitions, and meaning, put us here, creating evil through our ways of living. So when we begin the journey, we have a call to seek truth and walk the way. Walk the path, walk and live the way. It's an effort towards transformation. That's when we first have our call to seek truth. When we have our initial care, we're rebirthed, reawakened, resurrected, initiated, begun on the spiritual journey, on the path towards truth, the way. Here we have a quote from Galatians chapter 5, verse 24, from the New International Version. Those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the sinful nature with its passions and desires. So, what are these sinful natures of and passion and desires? Well, these are the lower nature, the animalistic consciousness of not caring about truth and morality as much as we can, of caring more about pleasure gratification and amusement and comfort, not bearing a cross, not going through the narrow way, but going through the wide gate. It's easy. And just following our passions and desires to have fun and enjoy life and have fun. And yeah. So when you crucify those base passions, those lower attachments to useless crap, then you start to belong to Christ Jesus consciousness. So the virgin birth represents an important portrayal that is common to the journey of all of humanity through the process of the necessary subsequent stages of birth, a spiritual process. As I mentioned with baptism, the birth, you're rebirthing, you're in the darkness of the womb, as I mentioned, in the earth, where there's no light reaching. And then you're birthed into the earth, into reality. So it's a symbolic spiritual process. They're using aspects of reality in nature, in our lives, and representing higher order consciousness concepts through natural processes in our lives, such as birthing, such as the four elements, and how that works, the process of going through that. That's using nature to represent higher order truths, universal truths, processes of our lives, but using realities around us as a correspondence to create allegories and imageries in our mind. Here's a quote from Acts 14:22. We must go through many hardships to enter the kingdom of God. That's back again to the right. You'll see tribulation and hardship. The gate is narrow. The path is narrow. It's strict and requires narrow focus and dedication and effort. That's tribulation and hardship. So just on the right of the ladder, we have physical death does not open the door to the kingdom. You must be born a second time to enter into life and the kingdom, which is exactly what I'm saying. I think I mentioned it on the Natural Law Trivium and Consciousness chart infographic audio that I did, that afterlife isn't after you die. It's while you're still alive, but after you stop being dead as a walking zombie, blinded to truth, living in low, base, carnal consciousness, beastly, low, carnal, fleshly consciousness as an amoral animal, human animal, rather than trying to evolve towards the path and way of truth and morality as a higher order human being to be and become those principles, those values representative through the force of truth, love, good, right, morality, natural law, true self, higher will, higher nature, etc. I hope it's becoming more and more clear that the afterlife is represented right here. It's not after you die. It's after you get resurrected from the death of your current mundane, unexamined, inauthentic, false self-existence. That's what the rebirth is. That's what resurrection is, about 3 days. Yes, it's also encoding astro-theological aspects of astrology and of astronomy and the 21st, the 24th, the 3 days, the sun is dead before it begins to rise above the ecliptic again in terms of degrees and the arc and amplitude and the zenith in the sky. Yes, it does represent that, but it also has a deeper, because that's still, so you have exoteric, oh, Jesus resurrected, and then you have esoteric level one, which is the astro theology, and then you have esoteric other levels. It's like an onion, you know, different levels. There's the exoteric, but then there can be multiple levels of esoteric knowledge. And Jesus, the Son of God, in the tomb for 3 days, resurrected. It's about resurrecting from the tomb where there's no light into the light, into being alive. It's not a literal resurrection. It could have been originally written better, but the fraudulent bastards who recreated and tried to create a narrative and story for validation of history, or they could have altered it into this bogus story. I don't know. But all I see the symbolic representations as more valuable than any possible historic validity you can derive from it. So physical death is not about opening the door to the kingdom. The kingdom can only be found while you're alive. Once you die, you're gone. You're gone. That's it. You were born and you die. End of line. The kingdom is here. We have the potential to create the kingdom within us and reflect that outward as the kingdom on earth, which is heaven. That's the salvation. That's where karma is. That's right, which I talked about in the previous audio on natural law, trivium, and consciousness chart. I'm not going to go into it again. Karma is all our collective actions, which is where I talked about before, about the law of correction of the left hand returning, the fruit of our own ways. You know, sometimes even if we're doing good, other people we're living around are going to be creating evil. It's going to come back. That's the karma. You're, right now, I'm a reincarnation of you, and you're a reincarnation of me. We're all incarnating at the same time, and then in the past, all those were past incarnations, and in the future, well, we're going to reincarnate after. It's just people think of a limited temporal reference of my birth to my death, so I can only reincarnate after my death, when in actuality, it's all the same reincarnation. It's all the true self. It's all the higher self. It's all the higher will. It's all the one thing, reincarnated. It's not an individual, anthropomorphized conception of, oh, yourself, that you're going to continue in a higher self, which is different from other people's higher self and true self. No, it's all the same thing. It's all an individuation of one. So once you get other pieces connected together, it all starts to make sense how all those pieces connect and how the story you've been told about how there's an afterlife and how we reincarnate, well, that story starts to fade away. It starts to disintegrate. Once you get more aspects of understanding reality and truth, that fantasy story that we're told, that we just accept without critically thinking about, that's just another story for us to believe in, that automatically starts to melt away. Because you see how ridiculous it is. You're gaining more aspects of truth and reality and understanding things as they accurately correspond and connect in a bigger picture, holistic understanding. And that false picture of how we reincarnate individually and how we have our own souls as a true self, as a higher self that has its own existence and that reincarnates. Poppycosh. People need to develop this concept more and delve into it more. Because once you understand the true self and you associate, you understand that that's one, the higher self is one, the higher will is one, well then that's the one for everybody. It's very, very, very simple. Once you actually start to think about it. So, from Colonations 3:5, we have, put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature. Again, the same thing we're talking about. Or maybe I already read that one. Anyways, always about lower base, animalistic, amoral living, and carnal, fleshly, beastly consciousness to rising above that. Begin, initiate, rebirth, become alive for real, live a real life in truth and morality. People who fail to understand the depth of truth and morality, who don't go deep enough, you'll never get high enough on the ladder. You're going to be a tent pitcher. So maybe at some point you realized how wrong you were and you begun the journey, but then at some point you didn't go far enough in truth and morality and you're still circling around, you know, useless little daily events and geopolitical situation, but you're not going deeper into truth and morality to understand deeper aspects of yourself or of the force of truth, love, good, right, morality, natural law, true self, higher will. Still don't understand that capacity, so you know, you end up tent pitching in your physical focus in the world, and you don't get to understand deeper things, and you don't get to understand as an automated process in your own evolution of consciousness, you're not disintegrating false beliefs such as reincarnation. As far as I'm concerned, that the traditional aspect people view is a false belief. Why? Because it's something that I was told to accept before, and then when I actually took the time to learn for myself and develop foundational aspects of understanding, well, eventually that confused belief, it was removed, because it was just fantasy. It wasn't based in any foundational understanding, any grounding. But when I developed that grounding, well, then my conceptions of these speculative possibilities, well, they changed as well. Because I have actual grounding in reality now, and correspondences in understanding truth and morality that I can actually create a better, holistic, big picture pattern recognition. Because the previous story was, by comparison to what I now understand, is a joke for me. So these are ladders, degrees, steps, grades, levels, stages, births, awakenings. From the Didac, which I think is the community rule, it's related to the anyways, it's related to the Nazarene, Essene, vegetarian, vegan people back then, which the teacher of righteousness was alleged to be Jesus, or Jesus is the character that's represented on the factual basis of the teacher of righteousness. And why is he the teacher of righteousness? Because it all has to do with truth, morality, natural law, and justice. What do you think righteousness has to do? Righteousness has to do with the true care for truth and morality, for doing justice in the world. That's what righteousness is. To people who want to say, oh, you vegans are self-righteous. No, we're just righteous. We know what's right and what's wrong, and we're going to speak it. And we know what morality is, and we know on what line of morality and immorality we are on. They say, oh, you're self-righteous. Well, brilliant, brilliant fallacy at attempting to completely dismiss truth and morality just by saying, oh, you're self-righteous. Well, that's just because you're an immoral idiot who doesn't want to face how much of an immoral idiot you are. So it's a lot easier to dismiss things by saying, oh, well, you're just being self-righteous. You're just on your moral high horse. Blah, 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 blah. Garbage, garbage, garbage out of my mouth. I'm not actually saying anything of importance. I'm just trying to dismiss and deflect away from truth and morality because I'm so insecure, because I don't have self-love, I don't have self-respect, I don't have self-knowledge, and I don't have self-responsibility to truth and morality. I'm a lowly dead person who doesn't give a shit about truth and morality in the end. I like to make up excuses about how other people who are doing less harm, less immorality, and less evil are actually on a moral high horse, and they're just in moral superiority, and yeah. Then I can just ignore what they say. Idiots. There are two ways, this is from the Didact, there are two ways, one of life and one of death, but a great difference between the two ways. Again, allegory, metaphor. Look above, alive, life. Look down below, dead, death. Earth, air, hell, heaven. It's all symbolism. Stop taking the Bible literally. Stop taking any ancient text literally. Stop believing, oh, the aliens and this and that. You have no evidence.